Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have a twofer for the people. We have Eddie Hearns, awesome interview, founder of Matchroom Sports. He is basically the biggest promoter, boxing promoter in England. Also starting to get pretty damn big in America. He put together the Canelo fight on Saturday night. Great talk with him, what it means to be a boxing promoter, everything behind the scenes. Also bonus accents always play on this show. Great accent from Eddie Hearns in studio. And then we have our good friend, Randy Moss back on the show. Derby winners, Kentucky Derby this weekend, one of my favorite weekends, where it's NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, Derby, and big fight on Saturday night. We're going to talk a little NBA, Fyre Fest, everything on a Friday. And speaking of that big...
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by DAZN.com/Barstool. That right there is the link to listen to myself, Dave, Robbie, Roan, and Caleb call the fight, Canelo fight, live from Vegas on Saturday night. Use that link, DAZN.com/Barstool. It's going to be incredible. Today is Friday, May 6th, and PFT, I think we got a problem.
Uh-oh.
I think we've got a big time problem.
The fact that
Chris
me and
Paul
you...
might be no, Chris Paul might be good at basketball.
Yeah, so I think he's confirmed good at basketball. That's never been the problem about Chris Paul, Big Cat. Chris Paul's always been good. In fact, the word good is the perfect word. That's a good word to describe Chris Paul. He's good. I put out one of those tweets. I did one of these got to go, and I put LeBron, Kareem, Chris Paul, and MJ on there. People still think that Chris Paul is the one that's got to go. So he's good. He's not great yet, but I mean, he looks unstoppable.
He what he did to the Mavericks in the fourth quarter last night was, and he's been doing it. He's been doing it all season. He's been doing it his whole career, where basically the first half, he basically figures everything out, gets everyone else involved. And then in the fourth quarter, he's got it all figured out. He dices and slices everyone to like insane precision. It was crazy to watch. They went into the fourth quarter last night. The Suns had a 6-point lead. There were 10 possessions to start the fourth quarter. The Suns went 8 for 8 on those possessions. Chris Paul personally went 6 for 6 with 2 assists. So he basically he demolished the Mavericks by himself by being Chris Paul in like a 5-minute span. It started, like I said, they were up 6 with 4 minutes left. They were up 24. It was like it happened like that. And I'm starting to get nervous because everyone who listens to this show knows that we love takes more than anything. And just because all the facts will show us something different doesn't mean we'll get off a take. And I can enjoy Chris Paul because I did. It was an incredible performance. But I really don't want to lose this take. I don't want him to win a championship and then we can't have this take that's very fun to throw around and just pretend that it's all about rings, even though we know in the back of our heads Chris Paul is an incredible, incredible point guard and like top 3, whatever, 4 point guard of all time.
Listen, we will never apologize for a take on this show. We'll never make an excuse for it. That's the part in my take difference. But I think that Chris Paul, in a weird way, I would kind of like him to destroy this take. I'm almost, in a weird way, I'm almost rooting for him because, like, at the end of the day, I think we have always acknowledged that Chris Paul is an awesome basketball player. We just like rooting for the fact that there's a narrative out there against him.
Correct.
And it's fun to talk about. If I'm the Suns, I would think about doing load management in the playoffs, but not by load managing Chris Paul. I would start to worry about like load managing all the other good players around Chris Paul so that they're less likely to get hurt, so that Chris Paul won't then have that excuse later. Like, it's almost time to be like, you know what, we're going to sit Booker and Ayton for this game because we've looked so dominant and we just want to reduce the amount of time that they have to get injured and then give Chris Paul another excuse to not win a championship.
It also is an issue. I love that idea. It's an issue that comes down to, it's very relatable in sports fandom and especially in friendship. Ryan Russillo has made it to a point where it's like, I want Chris Paul to fail because I know how much it matters to him. And that's really what, like, if you break down like what male friendship is about, it's essentially like rooting for your other friends to fail, in not like fail in a terrible, terrible way, like their life ruined, but the thing they love in sports, you want to see it fail so that you can laugh at them.
Well, yeah, no,
that's what it's all about.
What we're rooting for is to have an ability to bust Ryan Russillo's balls forever about something. It's really like, we will be 95 years old. Ryan will be, you know, still probably waking up at 6 a.m. chugging whey protein. He'll make the retirement home install a squat rack in there for him. And we'll be 90 years old and still dropping in being like, hey, Ryan, you remember when Chris Paul choked away a playoff series in 2022 after you called him your son?
Yeah.
And he'll be like, is your son going to come visit you?
And he'll do advanced analytics. He'll be like, and how many championships does he have? And it's no different than when, I mean, we talk about it when any of our teams are making a run. I think we all deep down root for our, you know, I root for PFT teams or Hank's teams or Billy's team. Well, the Jets don't matter, but Jake's teams to make a run, but eventually fail, because that's the fun in it. Like, it's fun to see your friends happy for a little bit, but you also want to see them terribly, terribly upset at sports. And that's really what it all boils down to.
I think it also has something to do with the fact that we know eventually, like, subconsciously, my friends' teams are eventually going to be good at sports. There's something good that will eventually happen to them. So I'm almost like rooting for them to be miserable now, knowing that like they'll get their shot in the future. Like with Jake, I'm sure that the Panthers will win a Stanley Cup, but it's too early for him. The metrics have shown that already. So I want him to have to suffer through what I suffered through before he reaches that mountaintop.
Right. And you want to build up everyone. Like, you almost want them to get so confident and then have it all come crashing down, because those are the moments we live for. I mean, this is like the, when you just boil down friendship, you want your friends to, again, fail in a sport, not fail in life, but fail in this type of situation to a point where you can just laugh in their face and they have no comeback. There's no better gift you can give your friends than have that happen to one of your teams. So really,
Russillo's
being selfish. He's selfish if Chris Paul wins a championship, because he's robbing us of what makes us happy. So, yeah, that would be a selfish human being. I just described a selfish human being.
But when, unlike us, who we're rooting for his team to fail, not because it makes us feel better, but because it would actually strengthen our friendship over the long term, because it's something good to bounce back. You know what it is? It's also an excuse to text your friends sometimes. Yeah. Guys, we don't talk that much, but when one of their teams absolutely fucks up, it's an excuse to pop in and be like, hey, you asshole, you see what just happened? And that's our way of saying, I love you.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, family good?
Yeah.
Dog good?
You need
all right,
anything?
Cool. Yeah. We should also talk about in this game, Luka Doncic. I've never seen anyone get picked on, star player, get picked on the way he got picked on down the stretch. I think I saw the stat. I think they hunted him in pick and roll 50 times in that game. It was, and like, they were so incredibly efficient every single time they went after him. At one point I was like, cause he went in the locker room. I don't know. You know, he obviously is dealing with his hamstring, but if I were him, I would have just said I'm hurt and just left. You know what I mean? It was so obvious what they were doing every single time. And it was so obvious that Luka had no answer. And I will remind everyone, Mavs fans and Luka fans, he's 23 years old. So, like, to be like, hey, he'll never get better is crazy. But last night was essentially the Suns, like, were personally like, we are going to embarrass Luka on a national stage time and time again. We're not even going to take a possession off. We're not even going to give him, like, ooh, this is actually bad. that was what it felt like. It felt personal, and it felt very embarrassing for Luka.
If there's one team that can take advantage of him like that, it's the Suns, too. That's like what they do best, is they find guys and they do the pick and roll. And then when I was watching Luka struggle to defend, he's back to like 2020 heavy legs Luka. You remember that when he had that like one stretch when his legs just looked like they were, his center of gravity shrunk by about like 3 inches. And he doesn't look healthy. He doesn't look like he's able to move around. He looks like he's trying to play defense in quicksand. And yeah, the Suns, I do feel bad for him, but what are you going to do? It's not like you don't really have any other options if you're the Mavericks. The pick and roll, when done properly, is impossible to defend in the first place. And the Suns do it as good as any other team does it. And they just happen to be going up against maybe the worst person to defend the pick and roll. So they're just kind of fucked.
Yeah, they're fucked. And the one spin zone I throw out there for Luka fans and Mavs fans, Luka has set himself up perfectly for a season or two from now to be in the best shape of his life. To be like, I've changed my diet. I got a new nutritionist. I put $1 million into my training. Like I'd almost be like sleeping okay at night if I were a Mavs fan. If Luka were like shredded right now and was getting shredded, I'd be very nervous. But it's clearly he can get in better shape. So you always have that in your back pocket. It's actually like a great lesson in life of why you should always stay a little bit, you know, overweight. Because you can always say, I haven't peaked. Like, I can still reach my level of best shape of my life. And when I do, you all better watch out. And that's what Luka can do.
He should just have, like, day one of next season, have Josh Allen drive his car in and step out and be like, oh, my God, Luka's so jacked up. Look at him right now. He does look like Josh Allen with diabetes, doesn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. Josh has to get some tattoos. Luka's tattoos are cool. Like, Luka's tattoos, I don't know why, but I mean, it's probably because he's cool to watch. You know, when you do cool things with tattoos, you just immediately become a certified badass. So as long as he just doesn't have to play defense, they actually switched to a zone for a little bit, which was so
why not?
Like offensive. Yeah, but it was so offensive. It was, I know I brought up pickup on Wednesday, and obviously the NBA is not pickup, but that was very similar where it's like, dude, we got to switch to a zone because you can't guard anyone.
You know what I would do? I would do the triangle in two. Yeah. That was the best defense ever if you were playing like youth league basketball, because every team would have one guy that was awesome, and then the rest of their team would stake. And so you'd say, okay, let's just put two dudes on this one guy, and then we'll do the other three in a low post zone, and they aren't going to guard anybody or do anything. They're just going to hang out and stand around. Like, why not try the box in one? Why not try the triangle in two? Like, take it all the way back to when you were 6 years old and throw everything, every defense that you can possibly think at him.
Yes, I agree. Box in one and have someone just, you know, get shredded personally. That's not Luka by Chris Paul. Other series, I'm just not into this series until Embiid comes back, and I don't know if he will. But the Heat are just so much better than the Sixers right now, and it's like, it's actually it's perfect for Doc Rivers and James Harden, because James Harden's been bad. Doc Rivers has been bad because he continues to play not a small lineup and like be like, hey, maybe we can have a crazy variance game and win this. But they both have perfect outs because Embiid is out. And it's like, yeah, you lost what a top three NBA player in a series. No one expects you to win this. So I watched that game last night. I was like, it was one of those games where the Sixers flirted with it every now and then, but it was never really a game.
Yeah. I saw Hank shrug his shoulders when he said, nobody expects you to win this one. Hank, do you still have expectations for the Sixers? Like, would you consider it a failure if the Sixers lost the series?
Like, I just hate that excuse. Like, when they lose and probably get swept, like, I'm going to be, like, dancing on their grave, and Sixers fans are going to be like, oh, we didn't have Embiid. But I'm just going to be retweeting, you know. There was a couple times, like, in the regular season, I was like, bring us Philly. And they're like, you don't want that. You don't want that. You know, and when they got Harden, people were like, oh, they started playing the parade. So if James Harden, you know, is supposed to be, like, your number two player, he had 4 points in the second half of game one, 4 points in the second half of game two. Like, it's a five-man team. You know, there's more than one player. Like, if you're supposed to be one of the best teams in the East, like, one player going down. Marcus Smart didn't play for the Celtics. They still won. Defensive player of the year.
Marcus Smart, Joel Embiid. No, that's fair.
Well, yeah, Marcus Smart actually wins elite NBA awards. Joel Embiid just comes in second.
All right. What about you, Jake? Where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, he are rolling right now. This game, I understand it got kind of close, but they were never in danger of losing this game. No. I mean, in game one, Tyler Hero came off the bench and had a great game. Oladipo is returning to Oladipo form. He had 19 points. I'm feeling good.
Is it sweep?
Maybe.
I mean, the Heat deserve all the credit because they're a very good team, and Bam is incredible. I was watching that game being like, I'm not really interested in this because Joel Embiid not being here means that this is not – like, the Heat deserve everything they've gotten.
Yeah.
They're the one seed. It's not taking anything away. I'm just not – I guess what I'm trying to say is the series does not feel like a threat whatsoever to the Heat without Joel Embiid. Like, it's a foregone conclusion. If Joel Embiid doesn't play, this will be a sweep for five games.
It actually feels like – it feels bad watching the Sixers play, and it feels bad watching James Harden play, because I think it's on us. Like, we know what James Harden does. We know James Harden actually isn't an elite player in the NBA anymore. He's not a number one option on any team.
No.
He's just not, but he's going to still get paid like he is one. He's probably got another contract where he can have a good offseason, trick somebody into giving him a big contract. But James Harden isn't good enough to win a series on his own. He's not even good enough to make a series competitive on his own. So,
no.
Yeah, it's just kind of sad watching it. And I'm mostly sad because we talk about how much we love the narratives. I can't even chalk this series up to Doc Rivers. There's nothing I can do right now. Yeah. Doc Rivers, Joel Embiid getting injured is actually the best thing that could have happened to Doc Rivers during these playoffs.
That's my point. It's robbed us. Like, James Harden, I want Joel Embiid to play. I want Joel Embiid to be dominating. And then we could be like, oh, Doc fucked up and James Harden's a bum.
Yep.
Right now, it doesn't – we can't say that.
Now I have to be like, realistic. I have to be like, James Harden isn't a number one option anymore. I don't want to think like that. I want to be like, James Harden is supposed to be the best number two in the league, and Embiid is the MVP, so he claims. How come Doc Rivers can't get these two guys to win a second-round playoff series? That's what I want to do.
I want a game seven, and Doc Rivers plays Joel Embiid 48 minutes, doesn't give him any breaks, and he's like dying on the floor, and everyone's like, dude, give him like 1 minute, and then James Harden misses a wide open three to win the game, to end the game, and I can just run away with that and be like, that was awesome. We don't get any of that.
No.
We just basically get, James Harden's not that good, not as good as he used to be, and he's not playing well, and Doc Rivers, while his rotations are suspect, he doesn't really have any options because his best player's not there. We've been robbed.
Yes.
We've been robbed.
Ideally, what would happen would be it would be game seven in Miami, and like James Harden comes right over from Gold Rush Cabaret, and he's fat, he's sweating, his eyes are bleeding because he's drank so much vodka, and then Joel Embiid like passes out from dehydration with 1 minute left, and he's just like laying on the court motionless, like his leg twitches, and Doc Rivers still won't sub him out. That's what I want to have happen, and it's been robbed from me, and I don't appreciate it.
Yeah. So, well, obviously this weekend, I don't know why. Well, I do know why they're not playing tonight. The NHL is king. This is – our hockey fans better be celebrating tonight, Thursday night, Cinco de Mayo, as, like, the greatest achievement of hockey versus NBA rivalry.
They should be. But
the NBA is not playing because NHL is on TNT tonight. Like, the NHL won tonight.
I feel like hockey fans, it's not in their nature, though, to celebrate that. They're probably weeping because there are no more worlds left to conquer. This is like everything they've wanted, but then hockey fans, most of their fandom is tied up into being like, hey, you should be a hockey fan. Why are you a basketball fan? Now that they finally got that for a night, it's like, what do I do? They're looking around, and there's no more targets.
They're just going around on Twitter right now trying to find people with LeBron James avatars and just sending them digital handshakes.
They're probably
like, good series out there, boys.
They're probably just knocking on doors, being like, hey, just in case you don't have the channel, hockey's on right now. Just like randomly cold calling people. I mean, good for the NHL, but also this is NFL is king. I can't believe we haven't talked about that yet because it's a big night for the NFL.
Schedule announcement. What time is that?
I think
it's it was next week.
I think it's tonight. I think it's in a couple hours.
I thought it was next week, too.
It's next week, too.
Yeah. Can you check, Jake? Here, I'll do an ad. You check, Jake.
May 12th.
Raising Cane's.
Oh, it's the 12th. Okay, so here's the announcement for the announcement. It's 1 week from today.
Well,
the NFL schedule.
I can understand your confusion, PFT, because in typical NFL, they did the announcement for the announcement like 2 weeks ago.
I love that.
Then they announced the international games earlier this week.
I thought that was the teaser for the full announcement, yeah. But they're going to do another week.
It's a three-week situation here. We're really dragging this thing out.
You know what we got to do? When they do announce that, when they announce the schedule, we should grade the schedules. We should give schedule grades.
Shout out the Jags. By the way, I just want to say, I want to defend the Jaguars. I want to defend the Jaguars. The Jaguars did the grades are in post where it was basically every website that graded the Jaguars draft. And they included our A-plus grade, which if you listen to the show on Monday, draft grades are the dumbest thing ever. So we made a mockery of it, and we just gave A-pluses and Fs, and the Steelers got a C. But the Jaguars included us, and a lot of people were like, I can't believe they included it. I think the Jaguars are in on the joke.
Oh, of course they are. They're a million percent. Like going back to like 2013, 2014, like between the Jaguars' main Twitter account, Jackson DeVille, their mascot, they've been going back and forth with us.
Right.
Like they get it.
So – People going after the Jags being like, how could they do that? They got guys. It's like, no, they get it. And I hope more teams understand, like, we will give you any grade you want. If you show us love, we will give you an A+. You could go 3-14 next year. We'll say A+ for your season.
Yeah. Use me, daddy. Do anything you want to me.
Yes. We're a vessel. All right.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started.
I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy.
Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Before we do our interviews, we talk a little hockey. We also have an unbelievable take quake from Bob Ryan that we should shout out real quick. Bob Ryan last night, I guess he was saying it on the around the horn, and he doubled down. He said the three-point shot distorts the game at every level, discourages pivot play, and promotes a mindset that leads to stupid shots just because. We never needed it. It's the gimmick of a promoter named Abe Saperstein. Worst thing to happen to basketball in my lifetime. Whoa.
There's a lot of bad stuff that's happened to basketball in his his life. The game was probably a lot more simple before the three-point shot. I'll give him that, I think. But
yeah,
this is a fight that he's been like waiting to bring back up for a long, long, long time. Because I imagine the three-point advocates won probably like – I'd say that debate probably stopped on a national level around 1988.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those takes – that's a take quake, but there is a kernel of truth because the 3-point shot is good for basketball. Shooting is part of basketball. To be like, it's a gimmick. No, you should award guys who can hit like incredible shots. But his better point is that, they're like the reliance on 3-point shots. There is too much of that. And I think everyone's talked about this. Everyone knows that like the corner three is too easy. Teams only shooting threes or like dunks kind of makes the game a little bit boring, but to say the 3-point shot is the worst thing to happen to basketball in his lifetime.
I mean, Coach K happened to basketball in his lifetime.
Yeah. What the fuck? That's insane.
Yeah. I think if anything, you can just say like move the 3-point line out, move it further out. You could have that same argument. I think if that's truly what he's getting at, that he's doing, we've spotted a Steph Curry ruined basketball in the wild. If that's his point, then I think you can say, move it back like 3 feet, back it way the fuck up, and you can get that. Hank, you like that idea? Hank just gave a nice little nod there. I would like to see, because then you'd only have, you know, like the top players shooting threes still at that point.
Right.
And then it would open up the mid-range game so much. I think it might actually be a better product.
I got a crazy idea I'll throw out there. Have you guys ever watched like the, I think it's U.S. versus Canada softball games they play where it's like grown men playing softball and just hitting dingers.
Yeah.
And literally every time they step to the plate, slow pitch softball, they could hit a dinger. And they limit it. So it's like you can hit 7 home runs this game and use it wisely. Use it when guys are on base. What if there was a limit to the amount of 3-point shots you could take? So teams now have to strategize essentially like you get to take 30 3-pointers a game. And it's like, do you want to use them in the first quarter and get a big lead? Do you want to save them? How do you defend them knowing that like they have 20 left, or if they have like 5 left, you can just basically pack the paint. I don't know. The strategy, It's a stupid rule. I admit that this is like a crazy cockamamie, like, what the fuck are you talking about? But like, when you actually think about it, it would be kind of cool to watch play out.
I like that idea.
Should do it for an all-star game.
Yeah. Or what if they made three-point shots worth not points for your team, but like worth negative 3 points for the other team?
Yeah.
I don't think that would make any difference at all on the final score, but it would be cool to see.
And you could, by the way, you could, under my idea, you could still take a three-point shot after you hit over the 30. It just would count as two. So it's like you can still spread the floor, but you just don't get the benefit of it. And, like, imagine going into a fourth quarter and being like, okay, the Suns have 15 three-pointers left and the Mavs have used all theirs.
Yeah. Billy, what
it
are
would
you
– It would be a lot of math, but it would be fun.
Billy, you're really distracting me. What are you doing? What's on your mind? You've been leaning. You've been getting, like, closer and closer to the camera with a creepier smile on your face.
He's muted.
I think I posted a problematic tweet.
Oh no.
Breaking moves.
What was it?
Breaking moves.
Why are you tweeting during the pod, Billy?
Oh, I'm doing a little blogging.
Okay, wait. I found it. He said, I don't get what the big deal is with this Roe v. Wade shit.
No, that's not
the
it.
The government
no,
should absolutely decide what
no,
women do
no,
with their
that's
body.
That's not oh. right. I posted a video of – I found – so I'm in these group chats where I get these insane videos, and I posted one of them, and it's not going well.
What was it? Did you delete it?
Jesus, Billy.
Oh, my God.
Billy, what are you doing, dude?
Billy, I'm, what the fuck?
Billy.
Billy.
So for people,
Billy.
Billy, delete this,
what
dude.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
It's okay, like these, it's these wild hogs killing a leopard, and it's like
it's, they're eating it
in,
eating its
eating
throat.
Its neck.
It's
dude.
Why did you think that was a good idea?
I don't know.
Billy,
I don't know.
Like,
I'm sorry.
Billy, I'm all for like I do think it's weird whenever someone watches like a video in nature and they're like, oh, these poor zebras, someone save them. Like, that is nature, but you don't need to see that on your timeline, zoomed in.
That
Ravel JFK.
You're Ravel. Yeah, you're Ravel. You're the animal world Ravel. Yep.
You have,
it's just
you have
it's
company.
It's like three wild hogs just curb stomping a leopard.
It's just
you
like
also
crazy.
Was like concerned. You were like this. I was watching your face. You were like.
Don't delete it.
That's how you.
I deleted it already.
Oh, Billy.
Shit.
You post it again.
Post it again.
I'm tweeting
Billy is canceled and let everyone figure it out.
No, Billy, post it again and say, I'm sorry for deleting my tweet. Please continue roasting me under this new version of the tweet.
Also, I like the parentheses of it says wild hogs kill leopard as if you didn't know what was going on in that video.
No, but it's just crazy because usually the leopard kills the wild hogs, but now that we're seeing reverse the wild hogs killing the predator.
Yeah, that's true. In most videos that you've shown me, it is the leopard killing the. This actually, it looks like Busta Rhymes and Dave Chappelle curb stomping that guy that got on stage. Which,
yeah.
By the way, did you see the gun that the guy had?
I didn't. I tell me about it though.
It was a gun, but it was really a knife. So you pulled the trigger on the gun, and a knife came out the front. I can't think of any scenario where you would want to have like a more illegal thing. That isn't actually functional, and it turns into a less illegal thing.
that's
like a syringe of like weed.
Yeah.
I also saw the headline was aspiring rapper. That's got to be brutal because that means that like someone listened and was like, okay, yeah, he's aspiring. He's not a rapper.
Not there
like,
yet.
He's aspiring. He's trying to be a rapper. Billy, you're canceled. I just tweeted Billy's canceled, so you might as well put it back up.
Okay, but I'm putting why I really deleted it is that I didn't want to get my account reported, so I put it on my burner. So I'm going to post it from the burner.
That's why you really deleted it, not because everybody was roasting you?
Well, I don't care about them. I think it was the wrong time because it was lunchtime and everyone's on their lunch break, and they're like, I'm eating lunch. So,
you gotta blame, everyone on Twitter's on the same time zone.
You got to blame it on PC culture, Billy.
Yeah.
I love the definition.
Oh my god!
Predator that becomes prey.
Billy, we're like
Billy's
having a conversation.
Like if you're watching the YouTube, like Billy's watching Billy like come to the realization that he posted a problematic tweet. It was an all-time visual. Like you gotta watch the YouTube just for that. You could tell he was not listening at all, and he was just like Yeah, like PFT said, he was getting closer and closer to his computer, like with a wider and wider smile.
Oh my god! Oh my god! All right. Anything hockey? Let's just move on. We'll do Randy Moss and Eddie Hearns. Anything hockey? The Maple Leafs. I'm starting to feel.
No, the Leafs are fine.
That was bad. That was bad.
Leafs are fine. They'll figure it out. It's the Leafs' year. I'm still confident in the boys up north. I just still feel bad for Rangers fans. They're down so bad. Even if they win tonight, it wasn't really even worth it. Like, it's not even going to replace half the pain of what they went through earlier this week.
They're going to win tonight.
I hope so.
They're going to win tonight.
I really hope so. Although, there is a big part of me that would really like to see Penguins Caps. I would love to see that one more time.
They're going to win tonight. I'm going to put my – no, I'm not going to do Game of the Year. I almost did that. They're going to win tonight. They're going to win tonight.
I'm also thinking that tonight, Jake, I'm going to graciously allow Jake to beat the Capitals tonight. I think tonight is the Panthers' night, so congrats, Jake. Right.
We'll see some rats on the ice.
Is that what you guys do?
They throw rats on the ice after a win.
You throw rat like actual rats?
Toy rats.
Oh. If it was actual rats, I'd be impressed.
Yeah.
Let's do Randy Moss first, Kentucky Derby picks, and then we'll go to Eddie Hearn.
We're going to get to Randy Moss in a second, but he's brought to you by Game Time. If you're in Louisville this weekend and you're looking to go to the Derby, guess what you should use? Game Time. That's right. The Game Time app can get you into any event, any sports game, any concert that you want. They've got the best place to find the cheapest last-minute tickets. That's with the Game Time app. It's the biggest last-minute price drops found anywhere across all the different apps. Game Time has you covered. You can find the seats that you thought you could never buy. If you like to plan ahead, NFL schedule comes out May 12th. That's right. It's out on May 12th. So get your tickets on the Game Time app and use code PMT. Use promo code PMT. We get all our tickets with the Game Time app. I was at the Mets game on Monday. I was at the Rangers game on Friday. We're at the Nets game the Monday before that. All thanks to our great friends at Game Time. It's the only place to get the best, cheapest, last-minute tickets. That's right. It's the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app. Go to the account tab to create a login. Redeem code PMT for $20 off your first purchase. Some terms do apply. I just had somebody hit me up, actually, on Twitter. They DM'd me. They said, hey, I'm trying to go to the Sixers game. What's the promo code? Promo code is PMT. Promo code PMT. You download the Game Time app, go to the account tab to create your login, and redeem code PMT for $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Now here's Randy Moss.
Okay, we now welcome on our very good friend, one of the longest recurring guests in Part of My Take history. He is?
Yes.
It is the one and only Randy Moss. You can see him all weekend on TV. The Kentucky Oaks on Friday, the Kentucky Derby on Saturday, live from Churchill Downs. Best time of year. Let's get into it. Let's just do it. How are we feeling overall? How are the vibes? Because I know we had weird COVID stuff the last few years. How are the vibes feeling like this will be the first, like, everything's back to normal derby?
Vibes are great. Full house expected. You know, they limited the attendance last year to 50,000, so no limits now. It's going to be just like the old-fashioned derbies, elbow-to-elbow people, half the people drunk. You know, it's going to be just like it's always been. The only problem is the freaking weather. Right? I mean, we see this all the time at the Derby. I don't know what goes on with Mother Nature in the Kentucky Derby, but last week it was just gorgeous in Louisville. Next week it's going to be gorgeous in Louisville. Monsoon season hits on Friday and Saturday, apparently.
Wow.
So we could have some pretty dicey weather.
So how does that affect the races? Are there any horses that you see that you're like, that guy likes to run in the mud?
Typically what happens in a situation like that, guys, is you want the horses – that are going to be up close to the lead. If the track is wet, right, if there's standing water, it's called sloppy in thoroughbred racing. But you want the horses that are going to be up front because they're kicking all the muddy crap back on the horses behind them, right into their faces. And, you know, horses aren't the smartest animals in the world, but they're smart enough to know that's not good. And a lot of them just check out when that happens. So watch for the front runners in that case.
Yeah, and I actually – so a friend of mine sent me a stat today that I wanted to share with you. And I guess it makes sense intuitively because we've had some incredible Derby winners the last, you know, decade or so. But the stat is the last 8 years, the horse that has crossed the wire first – so obviously there's been some disqualifications – has not had a trip that has dropped below third during their entire trip. Right. So that should – fit into what you just said as well with the mud, that you need a horse that can get out in front right away and stay in front and not have to play from the back.
There is a reason for that stat. There's a very good reason for it. Before 2013, Churchill Downs ranked the horses for the Kentucky Derby based on total lifetime money won. So what happened, you know, all owners want to run in the Kentucky Derby. So what happened was you would get these horses that would make all kinds of money as a two-year-old racehorse in short races, in sprint races, really fast horses. They couldn't go a mile and a quarter in the Kentucky Derby, but their owners wanted to run in the Kentucky Derby because they had enough money. And so you get a bunch of these horses that would wind up in the Derby, and the early pace would get out of control. And so all the come-from-behinders would benefit from that. Then in 2013, Churchill changed the protocol to get into the Derby. And now it's based on success in major prep races, long races, as a three-year-old mostly. So you get all that cheap speed that no longer gets to run in the Kentucky Derby. The pace is much more manageable, and therefore horses near the front have done much better.
I love it. That's a great explanation for that stat.
It's interesting that you mentioned kind of like the unproven speed in this race, because that's one of the big stories. I've actually been reading articles about the Kentucky Derby for the last like 5 days. I got an early jump start on my research this year. And there's one horse that fascinates me because he's dominated all the races he's been in, but he's only raced against like six horses. A lot of people are calling him like the Mickey Mouse horse. He's got Mickey Mouse titles. And now we're going to see if it translates to the Kentucky Derby. He's one of Bob Baffert's old horses, now I guess as a new trainer. Is it Taba or Taba?
Taba.
Taba, yeah. Taba. So does Taba, right now I think he's 12-1 or something like that. Is that a horse that you think can actually translate to the big show?
Well, here's the situation with Taba. No horse in more than a century has won the Kentucky Derby with only two previous lifetime starts. I don't care about that stat. Times have changed in thoroughbred racing. Horses are running less and less often than they used to. So if you like Taba to win the Kentucky Derby, don't pay any attention to his inexperience. It certainly didn't hurt him in the Santa Anita Derby in his last start that he'd only had one lifetime start. I mean, he won very, very impressively. What I don't like about Taba and why I'm not picking him is since the Santa Anita Derby, I have not been a fan of the way he's looked in his training. It looks to me like he may have gone a little downhill since the Santa Anita Derby. It may be too much too soon, possibly.
Fame got to his head. Horse. It's like Willie Beeman.
And he had a work this morning, a final workout this morning that wasn't particularly impressive. So I'm going to try to beat him.
All right. So along those same lines, the big story obviously is that Bob Baffert has been suspended and his horses were transferred to Tim Yakteen, who is a former assistant of Bob Baffert. Do we get value on these horses knowing they're Bob Baffert horses, but they don't have the B squared next to them that everyone looks at when they, you know, everyone in the world bets the Kentucky Derby. They see Bob Baffert's name and they're like, oh, that guy's good. I know him. And I'm going to bet him, and then the price comes down. So do we have, like, a very unique situation where we get Bob Baffert horses at a discount because it's not Bob Baffert's name right next to him?
You know, it's a great point, Big Cat, and I haven't heard many people make that point, and it's a valid point because the name Bob Baffert definitely affects the market for the horses, right? You get a lot more people betting because they are Baffert's horses, and none of the casual fans are going to know who the heck Tim Yakteen is. So that probably will drive the price up on those horses. And the fact that Baffert is not here physically and has not been training the horses since the second week in April really doesn't make any difference to these particular horses, because Baffert trained the horses all the way up until that point. He developed them. He picked them out, helped pick them out as young horses, and then developed them through their two-year-old year up until April. Once his suspension started, all they did, these two horses just moved a couple barns down at Santa Anita and changed stalls. They got the same groom. They got the same exercise riders. They got the same assistant trainer. They got the same workout regimen. Nothing really has changed for these horses except the name in the program and on the racing form says Tim Yakteen instead of Bob Baffert.
This is like one of those situations where if you're betting on football and you're like, hey, if you change the helmet of Notre Dame, you probably get a better, you know, line. It's it's a rare situation that, you know, you can't predict the future, so who knows if these horses are going to do well, but you'll probably never get another situation where you have Bob Baffert training horses up until, like, you know, a month and a half before the Derby, and then his name isn't next to them when you look at the racing form on Saturday morning.
It is unprecedented in thoroughbred racing. It's unprecedented in the Kentucky Derby to have this type of situation. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to talk also. I love the stats of the Kentucky Derby, because a lot of them, you know, who knows, it's horse racing, but some of them have some merit to it. So I wanted to quickly talk about the Japanese horse, Crown Pride. And
please,
it basically, you know, the stat goes, if a horse is raced in the Middle East as their last race, just throw them out. They won't finish anywhere near the top. Like, don't even worry about it. But this year specifically, and maybe you can give us some insight on it, Japanese horses have been, like, dominating. So is this the year that we finally get a horse that's coming from overseas that can finish at the top, you know, maybe not even win, but, you know, second or third on Saturday?
Every day in the last 2 weeks, Big Cat, it is looking more and more possible.
Whoa, I love it.
When I came to Louisville, I got to Lexington last Friday, I thought that Crown Pride, who was the Japanese horse, was a legitimate 30 or 40 to one shot. His race in the UAE Derby was good, but it wasn't great. The competition that he beat was suspect. And, you know, I had some serious question marks about it. He has been sensational here at Churchill Downs. And this morning he had a workout, his final workout, that every one of the competing trainers in the Kentucky Derby has been raving about.
Ooh.
Everyone that Jerry Bailey went to talk to this morning, we're like, holy crap, did you see that Japanese horse work this morning? I mean, the horse looks great. Whether he's good enough or not, we'll see. But he is definitely a horse to put into your exotics. And even I would even play him on top.
Okay.
In some of my bets. Because he's not going to be 30 to 1 now, because the cat's out of the bag, kind of.
Yeah.
But he'll probably be about 20 to 1. And one more thing about the Japanese horse you kind of alluded to.
Yeah.
Last fall in the Breeders' Cup, you know, Japanese horses had never won a Breeders' Cup race. And they had two horses in the Breeders' Cup that looked like they had zero chance on paper, right? And both of them won. That looked a lot worse than Crown Pride looks on paper. At the Saudi Cup in Saudi Arabia, tons of money. At $20 million race at the Saudi Cup. Japanese horses won four of the stakes races on the undercard. They won five of the stakes races on the Dubai World Cup undercard in March. Japanese horses are kicking ass worldwide, everywhere they're going. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see other horses run great.
What's that for? Like, what is there a specific reason, or is it just, have they done anything different recently? Training, money, whatever it may be. Because I'm just very curious about how, like, the year of Japan. Like, that's all you see when you're looking at the big races over the course of the year, that Japan has arrived and they're kicking ass.
It's been gradual, okay, for a pretty long period of time. You can trace it back to a horse that I know you're familiar with, Big Cat, even though it was a long time ago, a horse named Sunday Silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sunday Silence won the Kentucky Derby in 1989. He had a huge rivalry with a horse named Easy Goer. He won the Derby. He won the Preakness. Easy Goer beat him in the Belmont. Sunday Silence came back and won the Breeders' Cup Classic. His owner had a big farm in Kentucky, Stone Farm. Needed to sell the horse to keep the farm. Okay. Farms are very expensive to run. Sunday Silence was worth a lot of money, and they needed to sell him, retire him to stud, and sell him to the breeders. American breeders didn't seem to have much interest in Sunday Silence. His pedigree was average. He'd had a crooked leg, I think, as a young horse. They were all about Easy Goer, but they really didn't care that much about Sunday Silence. And the Japanese stepped in and outbid the Americans for Sunday Silence. Took the horse to Japan, where Sunday Silence has been one of, if not the greatest stallion in the second half of the 20th century worldwide.
That's crazy.
That horse has completely revolutionized the breed in Japan. And all those horses that I ticked off that won the Breeders' Cup and at Saudi, Dubai, every one of them traced back to Sunday Silence.
That's incredible.
I remember that Kentucky Derby. That's incredible. That's like my first sports memory is actually Sunday Silence beating Easy Goer at the Derby.
That's incredible that it goes all the way back to that. I love it.
You know, that's the genesis of it. Now, horse racing in Japan is gigantic. I mean, you see shots of the Kentucky Derby. You know, it's like that almost every weekend in Japan. It's crazy, Japan and Hong Kong, the amount of people that come out to the racetrack and the amount of money that is bet. They do a great job training horses. So it's a top-class operation in Japan, and now they're just really, really clicking on all cylinders.
So when it comes to the crowds like that, do you think that is there any measurements that you can take to say, like, horses actually race faster when there's a loud crowd around? Like, do the horses get energy off a big audience compared to, you know, the Derby a couple of years ago when there was nobody there?
You know, that was a question that often came up during the pandemic Kentucky Derby because some people would say, they would ask me, you guys didn't, but other people would, you know, so how are the horses going to react without the adrenaline of all the people and all that? Horses hate crowds. Boy, thoroughbred racehorses are extremely high strung. They like peace and quiet and tranquility. They don't like loud noises. They don't like a lot of cheering, you know. So the question always in the Kentucky Derby with 150,000 people is always, you know, how are the horses going to handle all the noise? Some of them, you know, can flip out occasionally and can mess them up. There's a horse in the Derby this year called Cyberknife that is notoriously unpredictable around people and around, you know, he threw his rider in the post parade of the Arkansas Derby and everything. So, no, horses do not like big crowds.
Would that mean that they would run slower or would they run faster to get away from the crowds?
They would typically run slower because they would be nervous. They would be, you know, some horses are laid back. Some thoroughbreds are very laid back. Doesn't bother them at all. Most of them are pretty high strung. Occasionally you get ones that are extremely high strung. And those are the ones when they get all the loud noises, they fall apart mentally.
Yeah.
And so they just completely lose their race.
So 20 horses in the field. Is 20 horses too many? That seems like a lot of horses.
It's a lot of horses. It's more horses than you would see in any race in America any given year. No other race has 20 horses in America. And people complain all the time about it, right? And it's a bogus complaint. Don't believe it when people say you need to reduce the Kentucky Derby. 20 horses is too many. It's a cavalry charge. It's a crapshoot. It's all luck. That's BS. It is not all luck. If you go back historically and look at the Kentucky Derbies with 20 horses, okay, and you look at them in hindsight and you say, okay, this horse won the Kentucky Derby. Was it proven in later results and later racing that that was the best horse in the race? And it's like 75-80% of the time.
Yeah.
Best horse wins the Kentucky Derby. What it takes to win the Kentucky Derby, the patience, the acceleration, the ability to hit the holes when you need to hit the holes, the overall talent to beat the best horses of your generation. The Derby is probably the best litmus test of greatness of any race in America. So at the 20 horses is part of that.
So along the same lines of the 20 horses, I know the gate changed a few years ago and it became a uniform gate across. So let me ask you this. If it used to be like, hey, if you're in the, you know, the rail position to start or, you know, the first three, it's a bad spot. You don't want to be there. Has that gone away because of the gate change? And really specifically, I love the horse Epicenter who's starting out of the three. And
right.
I mean, he's just a fast fucking horse. What, like, does it matter that he's near the rail now with the gate change?
Well, first of all, the new starting gate alleviates a lot of the problems that horses from the number one post position would have, mm-hmm. having to move out a little bit after the start to avoid, you know, the inner rail. That's no longer the case. So that helps. Horsemen still don't like inside post positions in the Derby. They have an unrealistic phobia about inside post positions because they're afraid their horses will get trapped on the rail. For some reason, when it comes to the Kentucky Derby, horsemen forget physics. They forget geometry, really.
Right.
They forget that it's the shortest way around the track running next to the rail, and that's a huge advantage in a race like the Kentucky Derby with so many horses often. Epicenter is the perfect horse to take advantage of an inside post position because he has tactical speed. He's not going to be in the middle of the pack with a ton of horses to his outside and have to worry about getting out, getting off the rail when it's time to go. He's going to be up either in front or near the front early where there's not any traffic, and he'll be racing on the rail and saving ground. And it's, I think, it's a great post position for Epicenter.
Okay.
And that's probably why, that's why I'm picking him. Really.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There you go. There's the pick. I love it. We should also, we should mention, obviously, the favorite, Zandon, Chad Brown on Zandon. I watched that race that he had, what was it, like a few weeks ago. It was incredible. Through traffic, great finish. The Kentucky Derby recently has been, the favorite has won. Do you see any value if he goes off at 3-1, 2-1?
Value, no. His prep race in the Bluegrass, I thought, was the most visually impressive of any of the prep races, right? I in my eyes, it's either going to be Epicenter or Zandon, unless the Japanese horse completely freaks and does what Japanese horses have been doing lately. I got to focus on those two horses. The difference to me, they're very similar on paper, is that Epicenter is going to be up near the front, and Zandon is going to have to rally from farther back in the pack and potentially have to deal with, you know, traffic issues that Epicenter won't have to deal with. But Zandon is a very good horse as well, and either one of those horses could be, you know, deserving Kentucky Derby winners. And the irony here is that Epicenter is trained by Steve Asmussen. No trainer in the history of North America has won as many races as Steve Asmussen, and he's never won the Kentucky Derby.
Huh.
And Zandon is trained by Chad Brown, who has been the champion trainer in America. He's a fantastic trainer. He mainly deals in grass horses. He's never won the Kentucky Derby, so it's kind of an interesting subplot.
That's it. That is interesting. So his name is what? You said Asmussen?
Asmussen. A-S-S-M-U-S-S-E-N. Steve Asmussen.
This is his, like, legacy. This is his legacy race. Like, imagine.
Kinda, yeah.
Imagine if he were to get a Kentucky Derby finally, that's like the last check mark in an otherwise great career. I bet he probably hates Bob Baffert, huh?
No, he's actually very, very close friends with Bob Baffert. Yeah. We've had many conversations about Bob Baffert. Yeah.
Is there any, like, unusual tradition for the owner of a winning horse after the Kentucky Derby? You know how in golf, if you get a hole-in-one, you got to buy the clubhouse drinks. Is there any, like, unusual thing behind the scenes that the owners do, kind of like as a tradition that's been passed down through the years?
Yeah, go out and get wasted the night of the Derby.
I love it. Yes. I love it. Rich guys, they're just like us.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, so I had one last question. You always give us an Oaks pick for Friday. You got to tune in. Like, if you're someone who's just getting into horse racing and you love the Derby, you should also love the Oaks on Friday. It's awesome. There's some great, great horses. You get two full days. I think it's 28 races total over the 2 days. So give us a pick, any race on Friday that you got a I think you've basically hit this every single year, no pressure, but who's your favorite race and horse on Friday?
This is the best Kentucky Oaks. I've been to the Kentucky Derby every year since 1980. I missed the pandemic year. I missed one other year. This is my 41st Kentucky Derby, so it's my 41st Kentucky Oaks. This is one of the best Kentucky Oaks that I've seen since I started coming here. But I love Nest. Nest is the program favorite, which surprised me. I expected Echo Zulu to be the program favorite. And Echo Zulu is a good filly. She's undefeated. She was the 2-year-old filly champion. I think Nest is an absolute standout to win the Kentucky Oaks. And on Saturday, I'll give you a couple horses to bet on.
Yes.
There's a race called the Churchill Downs Distaff Turf Mile. I think it's the fifth race on Saturday. There's a horse in there that Jerry Bailey and I have been texting each other about for a couple of months. You know, last time she ran, I texted Jerry and said, here's a horse we can bet on Derby weekend. Her name is Waka Naka. W-A-K-A-N-A-K-A. Waka Naka. And then in the race right before the Derby, they call it the Turf Classic. It's on grass. There's a horse that Chad Brown has in there called Adhamo, A-D-H-A-M-O. And I like him hooked up in exactas with a horse called Ivar, I-V-A-R, who ran in the Breeders' Cup Mile last year and finished third and probably should have won. He's got a great post position, first start of the year, but he's training really well. And back and forth in exactas, I like those two.
I love it. Let's win some money. Any other questions?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
Let's do it. So we just to reiterate, Wakanaka in the
great name
in the Turf Mile, and then we've got
Distaff
the
Turf Mile, correct?
Distaff Turf correct. Mile, and then in the Turf Classic, you've got Ivor and Adamo.
Adamo and Nest in the Kentucky Open.
Okay, everybody, when those win. Make sure to tweet at Randy Moss and say thank you, Randy.
Either Randy Moss with a football
either
player.
One.
Yeah, either one.
Doesn't matter.
Tag both of them just to be sure that you get the right one.
We are interchangeable. It doesn't matter at all.
It's the best. We love having you on. I mean, it's so funny. The longtime AWLs, we've grown, you know, a ton in the last 6 years.
Oh.
But it's so funny because the longtime AWLs remember the first time we had you on. And everyone's like, oh, they got Randy Moss, the wide receiver. I was like, nope, we got Randy Moss who's going to win you money. And you're one of our favorite guests, and we'll talk to you before the Preakness, too.
All right, let's do it, guys. Apologies for not wearing my recurring guest T-shirt. I'll try to correct that when we get to Pimlico, all right?
I think thanks, you're the only guys. Person that has that shirt,
yes,
actually. You're the
yes,
only one.
Yes, yes. Appreciate it. And we'll see you on TV on Friday and Saturday.
All right, take care.
Randy Moss was brought to you by our great friends over at Simply Safe. Simply Safe is a home security system that protects my home from break-ins, but they also have water sensors, temperature sensors, and smoke detectors. It's very important, smoke detectors to protect your home. This is Joshua's story. Joshua is a Simply Safe customer from Indiana. A few months ago, he fell asleep with some pizza rolls still in the oven. Could have been disastrous. Thousands of dollars in damages to his kitchen and home, or worse. Luckily, Joshua has a comprehensive Simply Safe system equipped with everything to prevent break-ins and smoke detectors to sniff out fires just like this. He startled awake to the sound of a 95 decibel alarm from his Simply Safe base station, and seconds later, he got a call from Simply Safe professional monitoring. The pizza rolls didn't make it, but Joshua did. He believes Simply Safe probably saved his life that night. Protecting people when their guard is down is just one of the reasons more than 4 million people use and love Simply Safe. With a comprehensive Simply Safe system and 24/7 professional monitoring, you always have someone looking out for you. You can customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplysafe.com/PMT. Go today, claim a free indoor security camera, plus you get 20% off with interactive monitoring. Go to simplysafe.com/PMT. And now here is Eddie Hearn.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is British sports promoter, the promoter, boxing promoter, darts promoter. He is the chairman of Matchroom Sport. It is Eddie Hearn. We are very excited to have you on. We have a partnership with DAZN. We got the big fight coming up, the Canelo fight coming up May 7th. You're here because there's also a big fight in Madison Square Garden on Saturday night. This is going to actually sound stupid because it's in the past, but we're excited for you to be here. Let's start with the fight on May 7th. You're a promoter. This is like having a comedian come in and be like, tell us a joke, promote this fight.
Well, I mean, firstly, we talked about goats off air. You have the current goat, which is Canelo Alvarez, pound for pound number one, the biggest star in the sport, the undisputed super middleweight world champion. This guy, he just fluctuates up weight classes and just basically wants to fight all champions. Well, May 7th, he fights the light heavyweight world champion, Dmitry Bivol. Young, fresh, undefeated, huge puncher, great feet, and a really, really dangerous fight. And this guy, Canelo Alvarez, is incredible because he literally doesn't care who he fights.
Yeah.
And he's got like a strict rule, champions only. You know, he just wants to take belts for the collection. And, you know, he's a guy who's come up from welterweight. He's now fighting light heavyweight world champions. He's massively undersized against these guys, but he's also one ruthless motherfucker.
Yeah.
I've never been around anyone with so much confidence, so much belief. He's incredible.
And Canelo has definitely reached that point where a boxer gets to a certain point where his pay-per-views become just like must-buys because you know there's going to be a show, you know it's going to be a great fight night, and there's nothing quite like a fight night. Now, as a promoter, are you rooting for either side? Do you just root for a great fight?
You know, I represent both guys.
Right. So is there...
But at the same time, people do take the mickey out of me in boxing because of my affection towards Canelo Alvarez.
Right.
One, because he's the biggest star in the sport. Two, because he's a great guy. Three, because he's a great.
Right.
And there's nothing like being around a great. And when you're around Canelo Alvarez, you feel like a great because it's infectious. You know, you watch him, you watch his confidence, the way he fights, the way he lives his life. He's a winner, you know? And
But a rematch, if he lost, and then a trilogy, you got to be thinking that as a promoter, right?
Like, I know this sounds really sort of, you know, on the fence, but it's literally when you have two guys who fight each other, it's may the best man win. For Dmitry Bivol, he gets the opportunity to become a great himself. He gets the biggest payday of his career. Good luck to you, son.
Yeah.
And for Canelo Alvarez, this is the fight he wanted. You know, he said, get me a champion. Get me a light heavyweight world champion. I said, I got Dmitry Bivol. He's undefeated. He punches very hard. He's got great feet. He may be the best in the division. And Canelo went perfect. Done. You know, it's not something we see in boxing today. And like you said, a Cinco de Mayo weekend in Las Vegas promoting Canelo Alvarez doesn't get any bigger.
The best. Yeah, are there certain fighters that are easy to work with? Like, you'll pick up the phone, give them a call, and you know that they'll say, yes, I'll do it. And then certain guys that you have to, like, massage into it or are kind of like work your way around with concessions, things like that.
Eddie Reynoso is Canelo's trainer and manager, and they're inseparable. You know, they have been for his whole career, but they're fearless, right? And when you work with those kind of fighters, they're not looking for the easy touch. They're not worried about the easier fight. They're just like, yeah, him, fine, he'll do. Mm-hmm. You know, and once they give me that instruction, when you're dealing with a great like Canelo Alvarez, like a pound for pound great, he should be difficult to work with. Like, that's just the way sports works, right? The bigger the star, the bigger the problem. But this guy is so easy to work with. And what we've got him doing, he's speaking more English because he never really believed that his English was good enough. Now he's speaking in English in interviews. He's grown his profile to a bigger audience. And he's hilarious.
Yeah. I feel like Large here at Barstool has done a pretty good job of getting Canelo out of his shell a little bit. Because I think we had Canelo on, what, like 3 years ago?
Yes, yeah.
And he was just starting to, like, you know, feel comfortable expressing himself and being himself. But, like, you get him in a room with Large, and it's like, oh, this is my buddy. This is my, like, safe space that I can open up to.
But Canelo, we call him Canelo, Saul, he's one of the lads, you know? Like, so if you relax him, he's amazing to be around. He's hilarious. Listen, I've been to his house in Guadalajara out of camp, and it was a lively night. There was a lot of tequila drunk. He's great company. But he's also, any star is just a little bit, you know, standoffish. But like you say, Large does a good job. You got to go in there and you got to be relaxed around him.
You got to be yourself.
You have.
Right.
You have. Yeah. And that's why, you know, when Large does turn up, he actually goes, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah. Because he's a relaxed guy. Right, so, right.
But it's been seeing the progression of him over the last few years. Once people get to know him, you know, he just gets bigger and bigger.
So the promotion game, I love it. I'm fascinated by it. I've always loved it. I'm, you know, I grew up a wrestling fan, boxing fan. We have our own fight league. I don't know if you're aware of it. It's whatever your level you're at. We're, you know, minus a million. It's called Rough and Rowdy. It's like a tough man.
I've seen it.
Yeah, contest. So we promote fights. And I it's a thrill to promote a fight. Is there ever in promotion? Has there ever been a moment where you had to tell the guys, like, hey, chill out, you cross the line? Or is it truly, like, do whatever you want because, like, everything sells here? That's why I love boxing promotion. Any storyline gets more eyeballs.
Well, you always want a promotion that where there's beef.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I can't lie. If two guys come together at the weigh-in, I'm always in the middle.
Yep.
And it's only
You're a meme.
Yeah, but it's only I am. But it's only when we get to a bigger weight class that I have a big problem. Because if it's like the featherweight division or the lightweights, I can, like, you know, I'm 6'5" and 220 pounds. I'm not that tough, but I can at least get in the middle.
Right.
With the big boys, like, if I could take one punch, if I just take a punch that wasn't even meant for me, I'm getting knocked clean out, you know? And when we did Dillian White against Derek Chisora, it's very famous. Chisora picked up a table, you know, and threw it actually at me. But it was at Dillian White, but it hit me. But it was massive.
Right.
You know, so at the same time, it's really.
Like, you'd probably take that every time.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't mind a table around the head if
the
it means a couple of million
great.
Buys you know, on pay-per-view.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I love about the fight
people
games.
Love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I always think as well, like, there are some people that say, like, well, you know, the head-to-head, put you, you know, to do this and do that. I don't like that.
Do you ever,
like,
push them? I do that in our Rough and Rowdy. If they get head-to-head, I kind of give one of them a little nudge.
Sometimes before a press conference, I go, look, you know, obviously you two, I'm going to ask you both questions, and I look to one of them and just say, just to let you know, he did say that, you know, he's talking about your mum. You know.
Well, that,
but
that,
I actually did, I did Logan Paul against KSI.
Yep.
Right, that fight at the Staples Center. And the banter was so bad. Like, I'll never do another one because I really love both guys. They're so smart, these guys. But I tell you what, it was like, I did the press conference and I stood up and I was like, you know, guys, massive fight at Staples Center. Well, you know, your mum's down there. And I was like, oh my God, wait, where are we going with this?
So that fight specifically, you got some blowback because massive. It's not traditional boxing. And, you know, we did something with Jake Paul in Cleveland last summer. And there's a lot of people who are like, this is a sideshow. This isn't real. From my perspective, I'm like, anything that gets more eyes towards a boxing, like combat sport, is good. But where, what did you, like, how'd you feel when you had that blowback?
I mean, listen,
did you...
I saw the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, we were doing press conferences. I think there's like over a million watching live the press conference. You know, I could do the world heavyweight title and we won't get half of that, you know? Mm-hmm. So as a boxing enthusiast, it's hard to watch sometimes. Jake's a little bit different because he's at least boxing now.
Right, like, yeah.
He thinks he can be a world champion, never in a million years. But there are actually some boxers that are worse than Jake Paul. And he's putting the time in, he's putting the effort
Tommy
in.
Tommy Fury?
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, could be a 50-50 fight.
Right now. Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
But Logan against KSI was two YouTubers.
Yeah.
So I promoted a YouTube fight in that respect. I will never do it again. It wasn't a bad experience. I made a lot of money. But my heart weren't in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And but with Jake can fight a little bit. And at least he's getting to the stage now where he's going in with either fighters or combat guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give Jake respect. And listen, he's just co-promoted the fight with me with Taylor Serrano, and he's been a great partner. So you're right, anything that brings additional eyes to the sport, I just feel that when you bring those eyes to the sport, you need to give them the beauty of the sport and the reality of the sport, not two guys kind of like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
scrapping away.
When it comes to you promoting a fight where both the fighters are essentially, you're working for both of them, you're representing both of them, is there like a trust issue that comes with
yeah,
that?
Always an argument. And you know, the worst thing is you sit front and center, you can't show any emotion either way, because I've been involved with fights before, you know, and someone's knocked someone out and I represent both guys and I've just stood up and clapped. It's like next day you get a text going, I see you stand up and clap when I got knocked out. It's like, no, I just, you know, so I hate it because I'm the guy, I love to scream and shout and jump in the ring and celebrate. And you can't really do that when you got two guys. It's difficult. So generally, when you have two guys, you represent two guys, both guys in the fight, you fall out with one of them.
Yeah.
Generally the one that loses.
Yeah.
Do you ever,
that makes sense.
You ever fall outs with other promoters? Like, is there
all
any...
All the time. They can't stand me.
What promoter would you want to step in the ring with?
No, they're all old. You know, yeah. I can't, you know, I mean, I can't fight, but they're all like, you know, they have problems standing up after a round.
You had a beef with Bob Arum, right?
Bob Arum's 90.
Yeah. I mean, beat him up, right?
I would hope
Let's
so.
Let's make that fight.
Yeah. I would hope
like,
so.
Call him out.
That'll go down
call
really well.
Right
yeah,
now,
Bob, you 90-year-old guy, I'll bash you up. Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people are saying you're afraid to fight Bob Arum.
Oh, yeah.
I was saying that you're not, but.
Really? Yeah, apparently. Apparently he said something else. He said something about, you know.
No, I think.
Is this about your grandmother?
Really?
He actually knew her.
Bob Arum said that Eddie Hearn, you know, was born on third and thought he hit a triple. That's what he said.
Yeah,
he said he's a daddy's boy, and that's the only thing
true.
That made him.
That's true.
No, know. But seriously, so your history, I was that probably hit too close home, but I'm trying to make a fight.
I'm about to knock you out in a minute.
I'm trying to make a fight. No, I was listening to an interview, though, and it was
I've got a rich dad. Yeah, go on.
No, but it was very interesting. I just made the fight right there between us, probably.
Yeah.
But you said something interesting about, you know, your dad and being in his footsteps and him instilling in you like the work ethic that you have and that it wasn't, you know, even though you did grow up with some means because your dad, you know, has been very successful, that he was able to keep you, you know, grounded and humble. How did he do that? Because that's very hard to do.
It's first generation.
Right.
So like my dad came from nothing, made a lot of money. I was born. He, you know, as you would with your child, you want to give them a great life. But growing up, the person that my dad hated the most was the sport rich kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he always made sure I was never a sport rich kid. You know, winning was everything. You get given nothing without hard work. And, you know, I have a working class mentality. He takes the piss out of me and calls me a silver spoon kid. And I tell him that I turned it gold. And the only way I could make a name in my own right was to outperform him.
Yeah.
So he did really well. I've taken the business to whole other levels. And, you know, I'd love to give a sob story about, you know, I'm a bit jealous of him because he come from nothing and made it from nothing, whereas I could never do that. But at the same time, you know, I lived a great life.
But you told the story that, you know, when growing up, everyone was like, oh, there's Barry's kid. And you thought it was great when you were a kid. And then eventually you hit a point where you're like, wait, I want to be Eddie. Was there a point?
When I was 12, 13, walking around MGM Grand and Madison Square Garden at fights, I would tell the world that I was Barry Hearn's son.
Right.
Because it used to get me wherever I needed to be. But I guess you don't realise subconsciously that, you know, you get a bit of a chip on your shoulder that no one actually knows your name.
Right.
That you're just Barry's son. So, I don't know. With sport has been everything to us. Like, I grew up with all the fundamentals of sport. And I think young people today actually, I worry that they're not playing enough sport. Because sport teaches you everything. Mm-hmm. Winning, losing, discipline, respect, manners, everything. And with us, like, he was the dad where you could take 10 penalties and you might have missed 9, but every other dad jumps over the last one to let you score. He's the one that tips it around the corner mm-hmm. and celebrates after, you know. So, and I'm like that with my kids. And sport, business to us is sport. So we're always competing, whether that's against each other or whatever. So it's been a big part of my life, sport, because it gives you the winning mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we were young, he always said that when I got to 18, he would take me in the ring and we'd fight, because he wanted to sort of show me that I was just a rich kid and, you know, he'll show me what it's like to be a real man.
Yeah.
But I got to 16 and I was like 6'1".
Oh.
So we brought it forward 2 years. And he came out in the first round. But it's hard to tell this story because people don't really understand my background. And I just remember covering up and I just saw his face, you know, and he was winging him in around the side of my head. And I 3 rounds in and I dropped him to the body and he didn't get up. And he was so proud. Like, normally you wouldn't tell anyone, would you?
Right,
he
right.
told everyone. See my son? Oh, he knocked me out to the body, soaked it up. And, like, that was, you know, that was, like, his stamp of approval to go, my boy's all right, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be weird as a kid. Like, what were your emotions like? You knock your dad out. Are you proud in the moment? Or are you initially like, oh, my God, I fucked up. I'm going to get my ass kicked.
No, I wanted him to get up so I could give him more. Like, that was us, you know?
Now, the important question is, you have kids now. Mm. Will you be doing the same?
I have 2 daughters.
Okay, so probably not. They'll kick your ass.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But listen, they were, you know, I just, the same problem I, you know, when you talk about first generational success, which I was, like, their second, it's even harder with them. And I want to spoil them. I work as hard as I can every day and I want to try and give them everything that they want. But at the same time, there's a couple of key fundamentals that every parent should try and install in their kids, which is discipline, manners, respect, understanding the value of money, you know, being kind, you know, all these things, and having a passion for something. Because I see so many of these kids today and they just mope around with no passion, and that's when it comes back to sport. So I'm like, you know, play netball, play hockey, play cricket, just trying to push them into all sports. But as we know, every kid now is looking at their phone, they're TikToking. I mean, it's like drives me absolutely berserk. But I can't give them a normal life, if you like, but mm-hmm. what I can is make sure they're real people.
Yeah.
That's most important.
Do you ever, like, subconsciously find yourself setting up fights between them? whispering
no,
to
but
one
I do
person?
Do that with other kids. Yeah. And actually, my sister has twins who are 5. And just every now and again, I'll just go, just like when there's no one around, just look around and go, guys, just out of interest, who would win in a fight between you two?
Yeah. Well, you're a little bit taller than the other one, aren't you? That's
interesting. You're not as tough as your brother, are you? The next thing, they're rolling around. I'm like, go on, go on. And then my sister will come in and go, what's going on here? So I don't know.
So are you constantly, whenever you walk somewhere, like, sizing people up? Like, all right.
Yeah, it could be a good fight.
That would be a good one right there.
Yeah, it's a good matchup.
What do you think about this guy right here?
He's a big lump.
Yeah.
You know, I saw him, Billy. I saw you on the Canelo Alvarez tape. You were taking some. No, Bivol was hitting you to the body, right?
Bivol was.
Yeah, what did you think?
Up.
Did you rate that power?
I got punched by some heavyweights in my day, and that was just his jab.
Right. What heavyweights in your day, plural?
He fought Jose Canseco.
And also, when is your day?
So
you're
he fought Jose
years
Canseco.
Old.
I don't know.
And Jose Canseco took
cool.
a dive, maybe.
He did not take a dive.
He might have.
He quit.
Yeah. But no. Bivol's good fighter. I mean, it's going to be a great fight. You know, you were around him. Nice guy.
The way he moved and his size and power was insane. Mm. I think Bivol's going to shock the world.
Ooh.
Whoa.
That's my take.
Whoa. A lot of people do.
Yeah. Wow. Actually. Okay. Well, so
is that after feeling his power? Yeah. Because I reckon if Canelo Alvarez hears you saying that you felt Bivol's power and you think he's going to win, I think he'll be very concerned.
No, not at all.
So the fight promoting game, when you are coming up, I mean, I would imagine it's one of the only professions where, like, it feels like if you're cutting corners or getting one over on your competition, it's, like, applauded. Were you always looking over your back, like, all right, this guy's trying to fuck me, this guy's trying to fuck me?
In terms of other promoters?
Yeah, other promoters.
It's the worst business in the world.
Yeah.
The worst business. Because everyone wants you to fail.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, when you start out, you know, I've always had a passion for boxing, but probably 12 years ago, I started going at it hard, taking over the UK. Then we come. When I came to America, oh my God. Like, I just thought, because in the UK, brash, loud. And I thought to myself, you need to come into the US and basically tell everyone you're going to end them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I turned up at the press conferences. We're going to take over boxing, all these other... And basically, it was a bad move because they all just got together and went, right, fuck Eddie Hearn. Let's just freeze him out.
Wow.
And it took me, you know, a couple of years, really, to actually find our feet. And obviously, the growth of The Zone as well. When I came in, you know, I'm sitting down with fighters and I'm like, you know, we're with The Zone and it's this new app and these fighters are going, what's going on? You know, we're with ESPN, we're with HBO. And obviously, once the brand of The Zone and people saw how serious they were and obviously saw how serious we were and we started breaking down the barriers with Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin, it took us 2 or 3 years to gain the position we're in now. I mean, we're the only global promotional company in the world. Everybody else just promotes in their own markets. And right now, we're in a straight race in America with PBC and Al Heyman and Bob Arum and Top Rank and ESPN. Mm-hmm. So what a great place to be in. Just some mouthy kid from the UK who's come over to take on the world. And that's the attitude we got.
You were talking about when you first started out in the UK, when you first like went fully into it. And admittedly, I don't know much about boxing. I don't know that much about boxing in the UK especially. But I did read a little bit about you before you came in. And there was a lot of talk about the Harrison Faye fight.
Yeah, Harrison Faye, right? Yeah. So I used to do all the major poker TV shows.
Yeah.
So I would produce them. So I created all of the sort of major TV programming for poker. And I was playing in Vegas in the World Series, and there was a guy called Audley Harrison. Now, this guy won Olympic gold for Great Britain. Heavyweight and great personality. Like, everyone knew who Audley Harrison was, but everyone thought he was useless. But I sat down with him at a poker table, and he went, look, you know, his career was over, really. And he said, you know, could you bring me back? I wasn't even promoting at the time. I was doing poker. I was like, yeah, I'll bring you back. Of course I'll bring you back. You know, we'll go out, we'll win a few fights, we'll come back, I'll put you in for the European title, and then we'll fight David Haye for the world title. And before you know it, you could be world heavyweight champion. And he was like, yeah? And then I went outside and went, oh, shit. And then he phoned me and he went, let's do it. And I was like, oh, no. So he went out, won a few fights, put him in for the European title. He got beat every round. Right.
He didn't throw a punch, right?
No, this is for the European title.
Okay.
There was 1 minute to go. He knocked the guy clean out in the 12th round. In fact, I remember so clearly, 5 seconds before the knockout, my dad turned to me and said, I know you're disappointed, son, but when you, after the bell goes, just get in and commiserate Audley Harrison and take it as a man. I went, fuck that, I ain't getting in the ring. I said, I can't believe it. Anyway, he knocked the guy out. I couldn't get in the ring quick enough. I was hugging him. You're the greatest of all time. Next thing, I've made the David Haye fight for the World Heavyweight Championship. In Manchester. I've sold this fight like you wouldn't believe. Sold out Manchester Arena, pay-per-view bikes. All my friends have bought ringside tickets. I told them Audley Harrison was going to shock the world, become the new world heavyweight champion. He didn't throw a punch. For 3 rounds, he just stood there, and then he got knocked clean out.
It's crazy,
and everyone,
right?
Said to me, you're a joke, Hearn. You're a joke. And I went, I'm done in boxing. I said, that was great fun. Next day, every fighter's calling me. Wow, I saw what you've done with Audley Harrison. You've got to sign me. And it just went crazy from there.
What was that like after that fight, though? Because you had put your nuts on the line.
Horrendous.
And this was like, this was your name. And you have a guy that literally does not try at all in the ring. That's got to be a pretty low feeling for you as a person.
Before that fight, he's a great salesman, Audley Harrison, right? You believe everything he said. We stood in that changing room. Everyone got in a huddle. You know, he said, you know, the Lord, Audley Harrison said, they told me I would never get an education. And I came through. And I got a master's degree. They told me as I would never be an amateur boxer. And I went and won Olympic gold. And tonight, I will become world heavyweight champion. I mean, I was in tears. I was like so convinced he was going to win. Come out, didn't throw a punch. Sat in the changing room with him after. And I said, Audley, what was that? What happened? And he went, I thought the ref jumped in a bit too early. I was like, oh my God. So like, I was done. The next day, I remember going to a sandwich shop by my office, right? You know when it's like really loud in there and then you open the door and it's just like,
yeah,
you know, and everyone just looked at me and went, prick, you know. Oh. And I just thought, I'm done in boxing. I never even wanted, you know, I saw the shit that my dad went through in boxing, and I just thought, no. And then everyone started calling me because all the promoters were old. I mean, back then I was 30 and I was just a young kid just talking a lot, and people just looked at me and went, do you know what, it's different. And we signed everybody in the UK, and I got the exclusive deal with the biggest broadcaster within like 6 months. And we just took over UK boxing. And obviously America, was the next challenge, and signing Canelo Alvarez is just massive.
Yeah.
For our business, you know,
it's got to be. I mean, again, we're on a very, very, very small scale with our Rough and Rowdy, but when a card doesn't pan out, it's the worst feeling in the world, because you know people are paying good hard money to watch this and they want to be entertained.
My dad said it best. He said, you know, social media is so good and bad in terms of promoting, because back in his day, you would just put posters up under train stations. Whereas I've got the ability to hit a couple of million people in their hand with information about a fight. He said, but the downside of social media is you can finish a show, you know, and go, yeah, that was all right, I'll go for something to eat. Now you have to read the criticism.
Yeah.
And you can say, I don't read it, and I try not to, but of course you do. Yeah. And you want to put on a great show. People have paid money, people are tuned in, and there's no better feeling when you put on a great show.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, what a night. Because we're there to give people a great night. I want people to leave T-Mobile Arena. I want people to turn off the zone or listen to your commentary and go, that was a great night. That put a smile on my face. And that's my job as a promoter. So it hurts when it doesn't. You know, you guys can, even at your level, it doesn't matter. You can do a show and go, what a night this is going to be. Look at this fight. Look at the card. And it doesn't play out. And everyone goes, that was shit. And
yeah.
You go, oh, and you're deflated.
Yeah, so, because I heard you doing another interview where you basically were saying, and it struck me because we're obviously diehard sports fans, and those moments, that's what we live for. The moments where you walk out of an arena and you're like, I saw something I never thought I'd see before.
Well, even when we did Anthony Joshua against Andy Ruiz at Madison Square Garden, it was my first show at MSG. It was the World Heavyweight Championship. AJ was a massive favourite. You know, he got dropped five times and stopped, I think, in the sixth round. I felt like my world was about to end.
Mm-hmm.
They're still talking about it today,
right,
in New York. That was one of the greatest nights ever. The biggest upset in heavyweight history. I'm like, actually, yeah, we did that. I mean, it didn't work out how he wanted it to. But when you've got a great fighter like Canelo Alvarez, it does take the heat off, because you know, like, you know, we talk about Bivol. I know this fight's going to be special.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be anything but. It's not going to be a one-sided fight. It's not going to be an easy fight. It's going to be a thrilling fight. And it could just be one for the ages. And if it is, fantastic, because you're a small part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best fight that you've ever promoted?
I mean, probably Anthony Joshua against Vladimir Klitschko at Wembley. You know, Anthony Joshua is the Olympic gold medalist, superstar in the UK, around the world heavyweight champion. Vladimir Klitschko was the longest reigning world heavyweight champion. AJ dropped Klitschko in the fifth round. He got dropped in the sixth round. He was out on his feet. He come back to knock Klitschko out in the 11th round. That was in front of 90,000 people at Wembley.
Wow.
And it was, you know, it was just epic. And it's only when you look back on the pictures and you go, I don't even remember being there, let alone, you know, seeing those sights. And it's just, you're so engrossed in the fight. You're sitting there next to the ring and, you know, there's nothing like it. We work across, I think, 12 different sports. Boxing's so unique. You know, even MMA, UFC, I was at the one in London. There's something about, you know, combat sports, the brutality of it, the excitement of it. It's not for everyone, but it's for me.
Yeah, our guy Patty. You saw our guy Patty the Batty.
Of course.
That's our guy.
I was there.
Yeah.
You know, the first one.
And Molly the Meatball.
She's here
as
well.
We signed her too.
Yeah, well, she was there doing the Taylor Serrano stuff. So two great characters.
Yes.
Two great characters. That's what you need. You need characters in sport. And, you know, I enjoyed it because I started to understand mixed martial arts.
Yeah. Tyson Fury, do you think he's actually retired?
No.
Yeah, because every boxer, like no boxer's ever retired.
Tyson Fury beat Dillian White the other day. He FaceTimed me half a dozen times the next day asking for Anthony Joshua's number. You know, so he ain't retiring for nothing. I mean, look, he just wants to make as much. Tyson Fury, by the way, is a great fighter and actually a great personality. Don't believe a word he says. I was watching his interview the other day. He's like, you know, I don't care about money. I drive a Volkswagen Passat or something like that. He's got about four Rolls Royces. You know, he goes, I mean, I have got a couple of Rolls Royces, but I'm not bothered about them. No, not at all. You know, you just have selfies in front of them all the time. You know,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
But he's a great character, great fighter. I think he will always be there. But he may go to WWE and do a bit. Francis Ngannou, you know, talk about a UFC crossover fight. So I just hope he has those big fights against AJ and Usyk because he's in his prime.
Right.
And he could be a generational great. You know, and he's very good, but maybe he won't be.
And it is like very unique to boxing that retirement for boxers is used as a ploy, and I feel like boxers retire all the time, and then they're like,
he just says what he wants at that specific moment, so and then he has to roll with it for a few weeks.
I mean, how
so
many times
like,
is Floyd Mayweather
my last
retire?
Fight, and then obviously as the fight wins, it goes, so is that your last fight? Oh, yeah, yeah. Thinking, no, but, you know.
Have you ever considered doing that, using that ploy, like, you retire?
Yeah. I did say the other day that I would retire at 50 from boxing, never from sport, and I probably will.
Really?
Like, I just see, like, Bob Arum, yeah, for example.
Who you're going to kick his ass? Oh, well, what, September 12th? Madison Square Garden.
No, September 12th is a Monday.
Okay.
So we'll have to do it on the 10th.
Okay,
yeah, because obviously we need the big gate for
yes,
that one.
Yes, I love it.
So, but the thing is I look at Bob Arum in interviews, like, frothing. You know, I look at his blood pressure's through the roof. Normally talking about me. Oh, and that Hearn, he don't know shit about boxing. You know, it's like, and I'm looking at him going, what are you doing? What are you doing? I mean, one, how you're even alive, I don't know. But two, at your age, like, at least, like, be on a beach. Like, have a cocktail and a cigar, you know? I mean, I admire the passion and I admire that, you know, the durability that the man has. But at what point do you look at your life and go, don't need that shit anymore?
Yeah, but you know? I guess in the promotion game, you have to be competitive. And that's not something that I think turns off the second you turn 50
in all
years
business,
old.
No, but in all business, you have to be competitive. But boxing's very different. You know, I could do our other sports till I'm 120 if I lasted that long. Boxing's different. Boxing's sleeping with one eye open, right? And it's fun. I still love it. But I think to myself, you can't go, it's about a day not on your phone. You can't go 5 minutes not on your phone. Because if you don't get that call, if you don't take that opportunity, one, you've missed the opportunity or you're about to get fucked, right? So you have to, if you're going to be in boxing, if you want to be the best, you have to live and breathe it for every second of the day. And that's a lifestyle that not many can live.
What's the most ridiculous request that you've ever received from a fighter or from their camp?
Blimey, I mean, just generally, like, the arguments come. Sometimes you'll make a deal for a fight and it will fall through down to, like, the most ridiculous arguments. And a very common one is, I want first choice of changing rooms. And it's like, what? And then you go to your guy and you go, just to let you know, like, we've done the deal, but he wants first choice of changing rooms. Fuck off. He ain't having first choice of changing rooms. There's no fight. No. What are you talking about? You're about to make 20 million. Shut up and use whatever changing room's available. No. I know that venue. And there's a specific changing room I want. Oh, for fuck's sake. I'm sitting, I've worked on this fight for 3 months, you know. So different things, the way they travel to get there, the gloves that they want to use, drug testing for the fight, specifics of it. You know, it's just, it's never ending. It's very difficult. That's why, to be fair to Jake Paul, he's not been tarnished with the sort of bitterness brush of boxing. So when we did our fight, Taylor Serrano, people keep saying to me, do you like Jake Paul? I go, I've not even really thought about it, to be honest with you. But he's great for the fight. And we just got together and said, let's make this fight as big as can be. And we're all working in the same direction. But in boxing, it's like, I don't like him. I'm not helping him. Oh, you know, I hope he fails. It's like, in the end, it's so draining.
Yeah.
Because actually, when you work with Jake, although he's a little bit out there, like, it's quite refreshing.
Right.
Because he's like, let's make this fight as big as possible. Yeah.
Right.
Like, it's just common sense.
He's a promoter as well.
Yeah, he is. But he's also, like, him, Logan, Kat, they're geniuses.
Yeah, well,
they're content creators. They're smart kids. They're not just, you know, pricks who have got big mouths. They're very smart individuals that they know how to interact with their followers and their fan base and their platform. And they've built platforms that enable them to do whatever they like. You know, a lot of people in boxing are bitter about the fact that Jake Paul can walk into boxing. You know, you hear fighters go, I've been grinding in the gym for 25 years and I can't make it. I said, because you haven't built the platform that he has.
Right.
He's built that platform, that opportunity. He can do whatever he wants. Yeah. Right? And Logan's super smart. Like, Jake's smart, but Logan is on another level. You know, very smart guy.
Yeah.
And, you know.
So if it was just about boxing, where would Jake be ranked? You said that he's better than some professional.
No, he's better than, like, some that you'd give to a young prospect in the
tomato
first
cans.
And second.
You yeah, can say
yeah,
tomato
yeah.
cans.
But I don't want to disrespect him like that, because he may be a little bit better than I give him credit for, and that will show in time. But, you know, boxing, you got to be tough. I don't know how tough he is.
It's hard to do road work in silk pajamas.
That's a Marvin Hagler line, and that's a great line.
Yeah.
And again, sorry to keep you know, sort of praising Canelo Alvarez. But when you have more money than you ever dreamed of, mm-hmm. when you have more belts than you ever fantasized about as a kid, how do you want it more than ever,
mm-hmm.
right? In a sport as brutal as boxing. And that is why Canelo Alvarez is a pure winner. Because when he was growing up in Guadalajara and he was selling ice pops on the road, he dreamed of having all the things that he's got now. But now he's got it, he wants it more than ever. And I love that.
Yeah. It really is the best part about boxing, because that's the rise and the fall of a lot of fighters, where you get to see that story arc where they get to the top and then, you know, it's Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson, and they, like these things where guys get everything and it's hard to be as hungry as a guy on the rise.
But when the punches are raining down on you, mm-hmm. and you're in the clinch, right? When you have nothing and you know that if you get through this moment, you could change your life forever. When you've changed your life forever already, and you're back in that same clinch, and you're fighting someone that wants to change their life forever, but you have still got the competitive edge and the stubbornness to bite down on your gum shield and say, no, not tonight. That makes you a true great, mm-hmm. especially in a sport like boxing. So for Canelo Alvarez, you know, he still has that in him. And that is a unique fighter. That is a winner.
Yeah.
Because so many great fighters get to that level and they're not the same person. And I don't blame him at all.
Mm-hmm.
Nazim Hamed, you know, a great fighter from the UK years ago. Great example. One of the most gifted fighters of all time. Made a load of money. Ended up fighting Marco Antonio Barrera. Went to training camp in La Quinta. He was laughing. He was looking up at the mountains, laughing at the Big Bear Mountains, going, ha, Barrera's up in the mountains. What, look. And he was in the pool, you know. And then come on fight night, he got destroyed.
I mean, that's mm-hmm. the Rocky storyline right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
But boxing's so unique, and it's hard to explain if you're not in it. But how can you be that same individual that you were when you had nothing in a sport like that?
Yeah.
And that's very, you know, that's why Canelo is a hero to so many people. Still the same individual, still the same kid from the streets of Guadalajara.
Yeah, I feel some people have to keep inventing reasons to get mad in order to spark themselves to keep training.
Yeah.
And some people just absolutely love the sport.
Yeah.
It sounds like Canelo falls into that category.
You have to love whatever you do for longevity and consistency, because otherwise you get lazy. Like, complacency is the biggest, you know, problem in business, in sport, in everything. Once you become complacent, once you lose that drive, you're not the same individual. But that should happen in boxing. Because it's horrible sport, really. Brutal.
It's tough to just
brutal.
You know, get punched in the face and still love it, even though you're making millions of dollars.
Yeah, and you got like a ranch in Guadalajara. You've got a huge house in San Diego. You're sitting there. You've got people working for you, bringing you food out. And someone goes, you've got to go and do 12 rounds of sparring with some 21-year-old
Fuck
kid
man.
Who had nothing. Yeah. You go, no, I'm all right, thanks. I'll have a game of golf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what he does is he does the 12 rounds of sparring and then plays a game of golf.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Unique.
We were talking the other week about some of the fighters that Tommy Hearn has faced over the years. And it's funny to like look at...
Tommy Fury.
Fury. That Tommy Fury has faced. Looking at their combined records, I think it's like 12 and 174. Yeah. Where do you find, as like a boxing promoter, where do you find somebody who's like 1 in 40 lifetime?
Like, I mean, they're out there. You know? And it's... But you know what? Like, Tommy's doing that because he's actually not good enough to fight other opposition. But those fighters do nothing for the progression of a young fighter. But Tommy's fighting bad opposition because he's actually not that good. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but he's just not. Like, if we sign a kid out of the Olympics, you've got to build them and you've got to test them. Matchmaking is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a science to actually develop a fighter and mold him into a champion. Whereas with Tommy, the process is more like, is there anyone out there he can beat?
Yeah.
You know, oh, there's this bloke, you know, and
like, yeah. He's basically just fighting whoever he can fight until Jake Paul takes him.
Yeah, and Jake Paul payday for him. That's why Jake's in such a great position, because there's no fight out there for Tommy Fury that can pay him anywhere near that kind of money
right.
other than Jake Paul. And I think Jake knows that, and he quite enjoys it.
Right.
As well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and to be fair to Jake Paul, they made the fight, and Tommy Fury pulled out 2 weeks before the fight.
Yeah.
So he gave him his chance. You know,
Jake Paul would, yeah. I when I went to Tommy Fury fought on the undercard against one of Jake Paul's sparring partners.
Yeah.
And I was what the hell? Real quick, darts. You also do darts.
Oh, mate.
How can we get darts huge in America?
I'll tell you what,
I love watching darts.
Barstool. And yes. There's been a lot of meetings with Barstool and the PDC, which is a professional darts corporation, which is our governing body and our business we run. Darts has so much potential in America because, let me tell you, it is the greatest night out that you will ever witness. Go on to YouTube, look at the events. We're doing 20,000 crowd for darts in Germany, 15,000 in the UK. You know, it's growing at such a rapid pace. And coming up in June, for the first ever time, Madison Square Garden.
Oh, I got to go.
I got to go right now. Barstool, I know you're going to be there because I've been talking to DAZN and those guys. You guys, come to the darts. I swear you will not believe what you see.
Oh, I believe it. I mean, the clips that I've seen on TV are just, it looks, you know what? It's mental.
It is mental. But sew up your street because these are ordinary people.
Yeah.
Right?
A bunch of fat guys competing.
Yeah, but it's changing because there's so much money.
Oh,
so
I don't
now,
like that. No, wait, now you got guys who are looking like they do CrossFit.
Are they working out? Do you have to do like sit-ups to be able to throw a dart?
Yeah, but you know, you've got these guys.
You need weight classes.
Yeah.
You test for
heavyweight darts championship.
Is there drug testing involved?
Heavyweight darts championship. But you know what as well? It's like these guys are coming from, honestly, like normal jobs. Like it could be a builder, could be. Next thing, they're making like a couple of million bucks a year. And it's just, the fans love it because there's not like this territorial, I want my team to win and if we lose. So everyone just goes and enjoys it. Everyone dresses up in fancy dress. Like the amount of pints, you know, lager consumed is like through the roof. It is unbelievable to watch and it will crack America, and that's the first little step in June.
I like that too, because like everyone's going for drama, not like, oh, my team versus your team. It's like, we just want a great
a lot of the time
match.
They don't actually know who's playing,
right?
But that's, it's just great. Like, I hope he's playing. I know him. Yeah, he's got the funny walk-on music, you know. I like him, you know?
So what do you get dressed up as? Like, are you wearing tuxedos or where are you talking about
dress.
Costumes?
Whatever you want. Bart Simpson, Spider-Man, Batman. You know, it doesn't really matter.
That's that was spoken awesome, like right. A true Englishman being like, what should the Americans dress up as? Bart Simpson.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't really know any others, to be honest with you.
What is America? Oh, yeah, Bart Simpson. Oh, man. Well, Eddie, this has been awesome. I have one last question for you. It's our rowback question. You're a great dresser, so we got some rowback for you as well if you want to take it home with you. Promo code TAKE. Rowback.com for 20% off your first purchase. They make the best Q-zips, polos, everything. Promo code TAKE for 20% off. You mentioned his name briefly. It was a one-off. I caught it. So Canelo wins on May 7th. Triple G Canelo?
That's the one. Canelo Alvarez beats Dimitri Bivol in Las Vegas September 17th. You'll see the trilogy, Canelo against Triple G.
Okay.
Triple G did his part. He went to Japan. You know, after being out of the ring for 400 days and beat the world champion there, he'll be in Vegas next week, I'm sure. And if he wins, as I said, you'll see the trilogy.
Now, are you a little nervous, though, because the trilogy will be a week after you fight Bob Arum?
Well, this is something we have to consider.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll move the Canelo Triple G fight because of the size of Hearn v. Arum.
But, you're not going to move that one.
No.
That's locked in.
But the problem is, at 90 years old, how long can we wait?
Yeah.
You got to give him first choice of dressing rooms, right?
I'll give him whatever he wants.
Maybe one has the special toilet.
I love you, Eddie, because you are like, being a boxing promoter has to be just so, so thrilling, because everything you say, you can walk out and be like, I was just promoting. Like, you could talk shit to anyone.
But by the way,
that's promotion.
But I'll build a fight, right? So one of our guys will be fighting someone. I'll be going, yeah, this is a tough fight. This guy can really punch. You know, I think this, you know, this is a 50-50 fight. And then our guy will win. And I'll be like, go up to him and go, well done. He's like, no, fuck you.
Yeah, I heard what you said.
Yeah. You said he could knock me out. I said, I was just building the fight, mate. I was just selling it. Don't take it personally.
I imagine you take a lot of pictures with fighters. That's like half
with
the job.
With that one, you know.
Yeah, so do you do the point? Or
the point.
Do you ever do the
point?
Do you ever do the fist?
You get
fist?
Criticism for the fist.
Yeah, because
like,
you're not.
What do you think you are, a fighter?
You're not fighting.
So now you do the point. But then guess what? You get criticism for the point.
I like the point, though. You got to do something. Sometimes I tried to bring the thumbs up back.
Number one.
Yeah, number one's good. Thumbs up. You can do the corny sometimes.
I think if you're giving thumbs, it's that one.
Double thumbs up.
Yeah.
Steady.
Yeah. But this has been great, and we appreciate it. We're very excited for May 7th. Go buy the fight, DAZN, DAZN.com. You can hear me and Dave on the broadcast. It's going
to
be awesome.
Look
nothing better
it,
than
guys.
Vegas for a big fight.
Absolutely. See you there.
Eddie Hearn was brought to you by our great friends over at Roman. We all know that change doesn't happen without action. Whether you're looking for gains at the gym or a better experience in the bedroom, there's never any shame in showing up for yourself and your health. The folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. It's the secret to longer-lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, they're easy to use, and they're fast-acting, but they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging. Each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. They're super easy to use. All you do, you just take the swipe out of the packet, you swipe it on, you let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. That's all you have to do. Go to GetRoman.com/take. $10 off when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/take. GetRoman.com/take.
Okay, Firefest of the Week. Henry, would you like to lead us off?
Sure. I got a couple Firefests. This is just a general one. Apple products are the fucking worst things in the world. Like, the fact that you need to have these adapters just to use, like, I mean, it's probably a little bit niche, but like, if you need an SD card reader, you have to have an extra adapter. If you want to plug in an HDMI, you have to have an extra adapter. The chargers aren't USB chargers anymore. You need the specific, like, USB-C chargers. It's just annoying as fuck. I hate Apple.
It has nothing to do with the fact that maybe you forgot one of those items.
No, I have all of these items, but I don't have the proper, like, I only have a certain amount of the USB-C adapters. I had to get Big Cat one for his microphone, and it's like, I was trying to plug in my computer, whatever. The real Firefest was, I was in the Austin airport yesterday. I was in Austin for a day filming an exciting announcement that will be coming out Monday, but I was in the Austin airport coming to Vegas, and I was walking through, and I stopped them dead in my tracks. There was a vending machine that just sold cupcakes. Never seen it before. It was like, whoa, like, this is a vending machine, but it's just for cupcakes. And I was like, I gotta get one of these cupcakes. Get a cupcake, walk over to my gate. My flight's boarding, so I didn't eat it before I got my flight. I was like, I'll just hold it and then eat it when I get to my seat. As I'm getting onto the plane, there was a sassy male flight attendant who was like, basically called me a little boy. He was like, oh, like, you got yourself a nice little boy dessert. And I was like, what? He was like, I see that little cupcake. Like, that looks good. He was just so rude to me.
It sounds like he's being really nice, Hank.
No.
He was like, look at the big boy with his big treat.
That's exactly what he said, pretty much. He's like, you got yourself a little treat there, buddy? And I was like, what? and then I went to my seat so rattled, but the cupcake was fine. But it was just like, it was demoralizing, if we're being honest.
Hank's just not used to people talking to him that way. He's used to, please, sir, knocks on the door. May I enter, schedule an appointment to talk to me. Not so much the face-to-face guy he used to be.
Hank, I thought your Firefest was going to be when you had to address the entire Barstool sales team, and I was standing in the back, and Hank was like, please get out of here, Big Cat.
I was just
smiling ear to ear, and he knew that I was going to start taking pictures.
They asked me to do a little, there's a national sales conference. They asked me to do a little presentation, you know, naturally. And I'm luckily not that nervous of public speaking. I would probably credit this show and getting roasted on it for 6 years as a reason for that. So I'm like not nervous whatsoever. And then as I go to stand up, Big Cat like finished his little thing. I thought he was leaving. And then he was just standing in the background, like yelling, like basically like Kris Jenner holding the phone. Like, you're doing great, sweetie. And I literally had to ask him to leave. I was like, please leave. Like, please, please leave. So it's just been a fire week. Fire ass week.
How was the cupcake though?
Cupcake was decent.
Yeah.
Not worth the shame that I received for it.
I also just feel like cupcakes are that food item that has gotten, it's the ultimate example of like Instagram meets real life, where it's like cupcakes have become their own thing that like people think are just like cute and pastel colored and something cool that you can take a picture of. But as far as eating a cupcake, I can think of like five or six other desserts that are handheld that I would rather eat than a cupcake.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like all the frosting. Like, I like the cake, but sometimes it's too much frosting.
Sometimes there's not enough frosting.
Yeah, cupcakes are like five times a year. Ooh, that's nice, cupcake. Like, yeah. It's not something you like. I'd much rather have a cookie than a cupcake.
Yep.
I need someone in the Austin airport to also. This is the other thing. The cupcake comes out of the vending machine, and before you can take it, it starts playing a song like you just got a cupcake. You just got, it was wild. It was one of those things though, where it's like, kind of like a novelty drink for PFT. Like if I see a vending machine,
don't bring me into your big little boy cupcake treat.
That was the Blue's Clues theme, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, pretty much. It wasn't that exact jingle, but it was. If someone's in the Austin airport and can get the cupcake and take a video of it, it will give a lot of context to how much I regretted doing this.
Hank, last year for my son's birthday, I don't know what my daughter's cupcakes would be, but his were Elmo. So I'll bring in some extra after this year. You can get your little cupcake. Pat you on awesome. Your head.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
no
you.
Problem. Probably be Paw Patrol.
That's delicious.
All right, PFT.
My Fyre Fest, it happened last night, actually. So I was on the stream. I was doing Ghost of Manhattan stuff, and I had memes. Memes hit me up and told me before I started the stream that, just FYI, Castellanos, he just had a kid, but he's not going to take the day off. Instead of like going to be with his family, he's going to go to the ballpark. He's going to play. You guys know that I love to bet on NFL players to score a touchdown if they had a baby that week. And so he was giving me a heads up, which I appreciate, memes. So I'm playing the game. I'm taking out bandits left and right. I'm going after Putin hot on his trail. I get a text from memes, all caps, Castellanos just hit a home run. Put a bet in on him, which was plus 440. I was super pumped. I was like, oh, hell yeah. Castellanos just went yard. Memes was giving me the heads up about it. And then I find out later on that night after I log off and check all the box scores, they reviewed it. They said it was fan interference and they took it away. Yeah, I got Castellanos.
You got John Sterling.
I got Castellanos by Castellanos.
Like, damn.
I'm his most recent victim now for that.
That's crazy.
It was the right bet. It was the
I
right
thought you were going to say it was when you said you were going to come up Putin's ass during the stream.
Well, yeah, I did. I said that, and but I meant it in a violent way. I was going to come inside him violently, not in a sexual way.
Nice, nice.
With a missile, I was going to fire a heat seeker right up his tailpipe.
Mm.
Naturally.
I was going to put my rocket in his tailpipe, and then explode. And I did it.
That sucks, the Castellanos.
Yeah,
Fan interference.
After you go out of your way to put a sizable wager on him, that would have paid out nicely. And then you hear about it. So I guess memes, thank you for telling me, because it did give me like 30 seconds of pure joy that I'll never be able to take back. Like that was real to me. I experienced that moment. And then just later I had to find out, oh shit.
It's TJ Watt.
MLB rigged. Yeah.
Yeah, it's TJ Watt. It's TJ Watt. Okay, my Fyre Fest. It's one of those ones that's very, it's like a personal cringe moment. So on Sunday mornings are usually when my brain activity is at its absolute lowest, because it's like been a full weekend of parenting and it's just, I'm exhausted and my brain doesn't work. I was out walking. This guy comes up to me. He's like, Big Cat. He's got an accent. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe I ran into you. I'm from Sweden and this is my first time in America and I ran into you. And I just, for some reason, I don't know why, I was like, congrats. And I've been thinking about that moment like nonstop for the last 6 days. Telling someone congratulations for seeing me is like the douchiest thing you could possibly say.
Yeah, it's like you basically treat it like he won the game of life. You did it.
I don't know why I said it. I was just like, hey, congrats, dude. And I was just like, afterwards, like, what the fuck did I just say? Thankfully, I don't know if he really like, maybe he thought that was like an American, because he was Swedish. So I'm hoping he thought like we just say congrats instead of hello. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, when you have those interactions, like, or like, you know, when you go to like an airport and your Uber driver drops you off, is like, have a good flight, and you're like, you too.
Yeah,
and you're like, what the fuck did I just do? Those moments are just, they're tiny killers, they don't mean anything. But they stick in your head for a week.
Yeah, or if you like,
I said that when I checked into the hotel. She was like, "Have a good stay." I was like, "Thanks, you too." And then as I was walking away, I was like, "Fuck."
Are you ever? Might live there though, or if like your teacher's talking to you and you're like,
"Yeah,
all right, love you," when you leave, and you're like, "Oh no, I should."
Yeah,
I thought I was talking to my mom for a second.
Yeah, you call your teacher mom. Everyone had that moment in like first grade, and you're like, "Oh fuck, that's the worst thing ever."
I don't think it's that bad of a thing that you did though, because if this guy's like a Big Cat fan and he came to the United States from Sweden, seeing you like that, that's incredible. He must think Like, I did hit the jackpot. You were probably right to congratulate. Like, it would be like if I went to Italy and there's Mike Tirico. I would want him to be like, he got me.
Got him. Boom. We went to France and Rudy Gobert was there.
Yeah, exactly.
Bombing out of the playoffs. Damn. Love you, dude.
He's there coughing up a storm.
Billy, you got a fire fest or you just canceled for life? Billy reposted it.
I got to own up to it. So retroactive fire fest. I couldn't talk about it before, but now that it's out, you can go see it. I hopped in the ring with Dimitri Bivol, who's going to be Canelo's opponent on the broadcast this Saturday on DAZN.com/Barstool for our stream. And it's on video. Check it out on the Barstool blog and YouTube. But I hop in the ring with him with a couple pads on, and it was one of the scariest experiences of my life.
He also
that was my first Fire Fest.
He also got, what's your second one? Sorry.
The Hogs.
Oh, the Hogs. Okay. Dimitri Bivol, like, that was great when you went up to see him and you're like, do you remember me? And he's, what'd he call you?
He says, he's got a really good sense of humor.
Yeah. What'd he say?
He said, John?
That's great. That's a great move.
It's actually hilarious because I can tell that the way he's been trying to like learn English better is watching comedy. So like he's picked up a great sense of humor.
What if you just watch Borat? That'd be funny if somebody learned English by watching Borat and they thought that was like how we actually communicated over here.
Exactly. It'd also be funny if he just starts like, if he's watching comedy and he just picks up only the most controversial bits. He's like just talking about jerking off in front of people like Louis C.K. Or like he's got like real hot takes about trans people like Dave Chappelle. He's like, yeah, I've just been watching Netflix.
There's no way Bivol's going to win, Billy, right?
Dude, Bivol, like you can't not root for Bivol. The guy is just.
Well,
like,
you could be Mexican.
I will. Yeah.
I'm going to root against Bivol. I'm going to root for Canelo.
You could be from Mexico.
Yeah, but like Bivol, he's like. So the second episode is actually coming out by the time you're hearing this. It's on the Barstool blog. Probably check my Twitter. I'll have tweeted it by then. But he's just the chillest dude. Like, I went to a barbecue with him, and he, like, makes really good steak. So it was, like, a really great time.
As opposed to Canelo.
Like he's going to win then. I take it back, though. There is a way he's going to win. If he's chill, well, like, then he might win.
Well, if he just cooks him a steak and just gets him off his game.
Yeah, Billy.
He's like, here to eat this steak.
If you think his steak was good, you should eat Canelo's steak, because Canelo, you remember, the steak that he eats is actually
has steroids in it.
Stronger steak than the steak that Bivol eats. You'd like that a lot better.
No, but I mean, he has one of the most efficient jabs I've ever seen, but like I have a very small
So between him and Jose Canseco,
I've heard that from like actual experts. I've been hanging around with a lot of experts. And Bivol cuts the ring off in like ways like that people say hasn't been seen since like Ali, but in the way that he moves. So it's going to be a good fight. It's not just he's not going to just let Canelo walk all over him. And in order to win, he really needs to just knock him out. So because if it goes to a decision, Canelo's winning. So it's going to be a slugfest.
Well, make sure you buy it to zone.com/barstool. It's going to be awesome.
And make sure you use that URL, right?
Yes, because then you can listen to us. Jake, finish us off.
Yeah, the other day my glasses were on the couch and I accidentally sat on them and they cracked. So I got a new one coming on the way.
What a nerd.
Those?
What a nerd.
Yeah,
wait, did you tape them?
No, they're just like a little loose.
But, yeah, I can tell. You're off your game a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm okay. You are the dweeb that LeBron was talking about.
Yes, LeBron's doing a Q&A soon. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, I did see that.
Oh, no.
So he just tweeted this out random. Do you have the tweet pulled up?
I can find it. He said, I haven't done a Q&A
said,
in a while.
Man, I haven't done a Q&A on here in a while. Coming soon.
Haven't done a Q&A on here with y'all in a while. Coming soon emoji. And then the crown.
He could have just done it right then.
Yeah. Dude, I remember Pau Gasol once did this. He did like answering questions for the next like hour. He answered one question and just forgot. Like, it's kind of a power move. Just leave everyone waiting.
I have LeBron notifications set up, obviously, on my Twitter. So I'll be the first to know when the Q&A actually happens. I think it might be – we might have to wait until, like, August for this Q&A.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time.
Might have to be time to bring back Baby Bron because he's got three or four guys shouting out every night, it seems like.
Ja, he loves Ja.
He loves Jai, loves CP3, loves Tyrese. Mm-hmm. It was Tyrese Maxey last night.
Or just set up a bingo card.
Yeah.
Actually, I need to start getting my draft ready for what I'm going to ask LeBron in his eventual Q&A.
Yeah.
Are you better than MJ?
By the way, their tequilas are up for the same award. Like, I don't know what the beverage World Series, who the fuck knows? But I saw that they both have tequilas, and they're both up for Tequila of the Year. So if MJ wins, we'll be talking about that. If LeBron does, I'll just pretend this never happened.
Okay. Noted.
Cool. Yep. All right. Jake, you want to do the numbers?
Yeah.
Hank, you still Hank, you still haven't gotten it?
Yep.
93.
I have not won.
9.
69.
What number, Hank?
8.
93.
Oh!
You got it?
How about that? Let's go. Okay. Whoa. Hey, fuck your Panthers. That's a sign. Back on the Caps tonight. Sorry.
That's huge.
Actually, you know, I'd like to give this win to Hank. Hank, that
give me a roulette number, PFT. Give me a roulette number.
21.
We got to do a better job of, like, I don't know if we can write it down, but every time someone wins, they'll, like, celebrate. I'll be like, wait, that was your number?
Yeah.
It was like 2 seconds ago.
Right.
Hell yeah, PFT.
Let's go.
Caps year.
21. Put on 21, Hank. Let me know how it goes.
I'll do the same.
All right.
I'll do the same. All right. See you guys.
Hit him straight.
Yo, are you guys getting lunch or anything? Or
no, we're going to
play ball. Billy, come meet me in the lobby.
All right, I'll do Billy's animal fact of the day. Sometimes in the wild,
sometimes
wild
hogs
boars
attack leopards. Fuck.
Love you guys. Coming for your love. I'll be coming for you.